Hello, interwebs, and welcome to Close Up. I'm your host, Joe.
And I'm Ryan. I mean, Justin.
Threw me off for a second, actually. We have a Thunderbolts review for you today, something that's still in theaters. Yeah, yes, being somewhat timely again. And just some housekeeping, we are going to be changing the formatting of the show again moving forward, sticking to one review per episode, whether those reviews take 40 minutes, whether they take 15, 20, whatever. We're going to segment them instead of doing combined non-spoiler reviews like we have been doing. Because, frankly, that's if you're here for Thunderbolts, we can just give you a full spoiler review of Thunderbolts, and that's fine. If you're not interested in whatever else we would have to talk about on a combined one, you can watch those as well. So you don't have to sift through all this stuff you don't want to see. And doing full spoilers in our reviews from now on. And interspersing those with some of the other weirder, full-length general movie discussions. That's what we're going with right now. Let's see how that goes. But getting into our medium shot now, what was your hype level going into Thunderbolts?
Pretty much nothing. The only character that I actually really cared about was David Harbour's Red Guardian. And the rest of them, I don't know, not the biggest fans.
Yeah, these were actually my favorite characters from some of my least favorite Marvel projects in recent years. I didn't care for Black Widow, but I liked Alexei Shostakov and Yelena. I didn't care for Falcon and the Winter Soldier, but I liked Bucky and John Walker. John Walker specifically. I knew who Bucky was, obviously, already. Ghost was probably the exception to that rule. Not my favorite from Ant-Man and the Wasp. Didn't really love that movie in general, but it was okay. And then we have newcomer Sentry, Bob, who this is his introduction, and whether you like him or not, lives or dies based on this. But I thought Thunderbolts was a refreshingly character-driven outing from Marvel, with good thematic focus and a stellar cast to bring it all home. It's definitely not a top 10 they've ever done, just for the sake of argument, but it's certainly more consistent and a generally good movie. Not just good for Marvel, but just, hey, that was good in general. And I haven't seen that from Marvel in too long.
It's breaking the current average post Infinity War, basically.
Yeah. We're not going to get into all the weeds about how Marvel's failed over the past 5-6 years. But they're finally starting to bounce back, I think, with projects like Thunderbolts and Daredevil Born Again, which I believe it was Bob Iger who was recently quoted as saying that effectively it was a mistake for Marvel to focus on quantity of content rather than quality, which some people have been making fun of, like, wow, Bob, you're finally saying let's make these things good instead of let's just make a ton. Fine. Too little too late, but we'll take it. If that's their new focus going forward, making sure every project is of a certain level of quality over the gluttony of Disney Plus content that nobody's really watching anyway, I will happily accept that as a new status quo. I'm slowly getting out of the loop on Marvel Cinematic Universe in general, but I didn't even see Brave New World. Which, let's get to that point. Because this movie, Thunderbolts, is basically a direct continuation of the events of Brave New World. And I was impressed how the exposition managed to catch me up without feeling too forceful. Having not seen that movie, I feel like I got the gist from Thunderbolts about what happened and why it was important to this plot.
I feel like that's been something consistently that Marvel's done when their releases are really close. They make sure to kind of drop some stuff. If it's going to be relevant, they drop it in to fill you in a bit.
I think the reason I never noticed that much before was because,
well, you'd seen it all.
Seen it all. The only other Marvel movie that I'd never seen in theaters was The Marvels. Marvels and Brave New World are the only two Marvel movies I haven't seen in theaters since Iron Man 2008. Let's see there. So I haven't appreciated past exposition maybe as much because I haven't needed it. But coming in from my perspective, this was well handled. I didn't realize, for example, that Sam Wilson is trying to start his own Avengers team. And apparently suing for rights to the name, which is pretty funny. So, yeah, so there's that. And obviously, what's her name? Valentina Allegra de Fontaine. The de is important. Remember that. She's trying to start her own superhero initiative, Nick Fury style. And she's willing to take a worse-for-wear guy off the street, test on him, turn him into a superhero she can control. Most of the tech subjects died. She's trying to cover up the entire failure of a project, or what she considers to be the failure. And I thought that's an interesting subplot, because of course, a government official like that, if you could create a superhero, why wouldn't you? It kind of goes to what a general undercurrent of what a lot of Marvel's done over the years, even going all the way back to The Incredible Hulk, where General Ross and the bad guys of that film are trying to recreate the super soldier serum that gave Steve Rogers his powers. And then Falcon and the Winter Soldier followed up that line of reasoning where, and then, you know, there was the Winter Soldier and Hydra trying to do the same thing. So there's been this undercurrent of trying to get government-run superheroes, which is what they were trying to do with John Walker. Here's a military guy, not a war criminal or a international fugitive like Steve Rogers ended up being post-Civil War. Here's a clean-cut American guy who government can control. And Sam Wilson is also a clean-cut military guy, but he's got allegiances with the fugitive Avengers, and he's a bit more of a wild card nowadays, so he's not somebody the government can control as easily. And yeah, basically it goes back to what Valentina's trying to do is get her own heroes she can control. Civil War, the plot was all about that too, trying to control the Avengers for U.S. government operations and purposes. It's been, those themes have been throughout the franchise this entire time, so it's not like it's coming out of left field. They just haven't actually tried to create a superhero before, at least not to the level of Sentry. So, and as for Sentry, I thought he was really well done. I really like Lewis Pullman as just Bob, and how he was slowly built from just this meek guy they find in a bunker of Valentina's secrets and stuff she's trying to burn, including all the agents she sent there, and ends up being one of the most powerful characters in the Marvel Universe. I don't know why my nerd brain didn't click before I went into this movie, because I saw reports, he's going to be playing Sentry. And I recognized the name Sentry, but I never really looked further into it. I know there's a Marvel character named Sentry, but it wasn't until I saw Lewis Pullman standing in the golden suit with the golden hair with the S logo. Oh, that's who Sentry is. That's why I recognize that name. That's what many fans consider to be Marvel Superman in terms of how overpowered he is. And
it's not Captain Marvel?
No. Just in terms of, you know, the guy with the, once again, the kind of clean-cut Boy Scout-looking figure with the square jaw and a cape who's really overpowered in a indestructible sort of way. He's often considered to be Marvel's Superman. And I thought that was handled very well, especially when Valentina unveiled him and had him single-handedly defeat the Thunderbolts. It called to mind a scene you and I did back in high school where we had to play, you had to play Superman, and the thing we wrote was Superman stands in the middle of the stage while the bad guys whose bank robbery he's trying to foil are attacking him one by one, and he's just standing there taking it, and then he basically just blows them over with no effort whatsoever. And to see the MCU adapt basically that scene that we, that you and I did 10 years ago with Sentry, it was just really amusing for me personally as an inside baseball sort of thing. Like, oh yeah, Marvel Superman did our joke. Awesome. And that was a great scene, just showing how powerful Sentry is and how none of the Thunderbolts even can stand a candle to this guy physically. He straight up tosses the guy out, one of the guys out the window, and brings him back, rips Bucky's arm off. Just, and he doesn't even really want to hurt them. He's not trying to hurt them.
Like, I like how he just lets, like, he lets them go at him to a point, and then he's just like, all right, Bucky's arm off, stop it.
Yeah, you're done. And then I really appreciate what happens right afterwards, where Valentina tries to control him, and he immediately is, I'm the most powerful super being on the planet. You just said I'm more powerful than a god. Why am I taking orders from you? They just address that right away, and then you can see Valentina. Oh, yeah, okay. Maybe I messed up. Maybe my ego got in the way. I don't think she learned any lessons from that. But she does have that split. Okay, this was an extra failed experiment. And then Bob's dark side turns over and he turns into the Void, which is a pretty intimidating villain. I really like the way he was. I don't really know how they shot that. I guess it had to be a lot of backlighting, probably bolstered by CGI, just to create that black, fully black silhouette.
He's not even fully black. There's still some.
There is? Okay.
There's a very, very minor depth to it, but it's, I'm not sure how they did that. It's pretty impressive. I mean, it's got to be
strong backlighting or something.
Maybe?
Yeah.
A lot of CGI.
Probably. It's because the background still looks normal. And maybe they were doing volume shots or something. Maybe it's just more immersive than I'm giving it credit for. I don't think anything was actually outdoors, but I thought the Void was really cool, just turning people to shadows indiscriminately. And once again, the heroes are finally coming together at this point. They're very good at crowd control, and okay, it's the least we can do to stop cars from crashing into people or knock people out of the way from debris and boulders falling from the sky off crumbling buildings. But they really can't do anything for Sentry except allow their fate to unravel and go into his world. And I am a little disappointed we didn't get to see more of what the other Thunderbolts were doing in Sentry's world. We got to focus more on Yelena's own lack of self-worth. I thought it was a really great scene where she was fighting herself, and the shot that sticks most in my mind to me is when she literally forces a bottle of vodka into her mouth, and like the drunk sad her forces the bottle of vodka into the other one's mouth, and it just shows how she sees herself and kind of who she is when she's not doing the superhero thing, or more agent thing. I do wish we got to see the other Thunderbolts, their own mirror selves, or whatever they had to face, some of their traumas, which we only really got through exposition throughout the movie, or having just seen the rest of the MCU, we know where they're coming from and why. Maybe that's why they chose to focus on Yelena, because we've seen the rest of them at some point. Like, I don't need to see Bucky's flashback necessarily, because I know what his time as Winter Soldier was like. But you could have done something interesting with a scene where he's fighting his Winter Soldier self or some other representation.
I think it would have padded the time too much, so.
I get why they cut it. I'm disappointed we didn't get to see it, but I understand for pacing reasons why it wasn't there.
Also, I feel like the movie was trying to set up Yelena as the leader of the team.
Yeah.
So it kind of made sense to follow her through it.
She's the first character we meet and the one who's narrating these adventures, and it's her emotional through line that really carries the film, her lack of purpose and direction and depression and grief over the death of her sister, and her and Alexei's relationship, who wasn't there for her when Natasha died. They kind of went their own separate ways and were trying to be emotionally strong in their own right when they really needed each other. And after this movie, I'm starting to think I might like Yelena more than Black Widow. Hot take, maybe. But I don't feel like Natasha ever really got this level of character development.
She was always just used like eye candy, basically.
Ever since Iron Man 2. And Scarlett Johansson elevated her screen presence above what was actually on paper for that role from day one. But I think Yelena is an attempt to course correct that Black Widow archetype into a character of more three-dimensional substance. Which, once again, I don't love the movie Black Widow, but Yelena was the best part of that movie. She had the best character development in that movie. I really liked her role in the Hawkeye TV show as well, following up on that, trying to get revenge on Clint Barton for the death of Natasha. And now in Thunderbolts, where she has to stand on her own two feet and be a hero in her own right. And it's nice that Natasha's shadow still casts over her life in a way where she's nearly afraid to go public because she's going to be compared to her world-saving, universe-saving sister, and doesn't necessarily know if she's worthy of that kind of pressure. Am I good enough to be an Avenger sort of hero, or am I destined to stay in the shadows and underappreciated and used by power-hungry government officials like Valentina? And I like Alexei's perspective on the issue, where as Red Guardian, he decides that his purpose in life was to help people, and the glory of doing it in a very public way was icing on the cake. But you know, he really liked helping people and his country and being known for that. I think he would still be a hero either way, but the fact that he is a bit of a glory hound that way, but he's very patriotic as well. It's just help my community and my people. And mental health is an undercurrent in this movie where everybody is struggling with their own feelings of poor self-worth or just how bad they are in comparison to everybody else. And I feel like that is kind of a meta commentary on who we're following, right? We said that right up top, right? Nobody cared about Yelena or John Walker, Ghost, or, you know, Bucky was always sort of the supporting character in Captain America. People liked him, but he wasn't ever the main character, or Red Guardian. All these characters are like the glimmer of light in some of the worst parts of the MCU. And they feel that too. There's that one line where, they're trapped in that one room and they're trying to get out and they're like, okay, so how do we do this? No, none of us can fly, right? No, we just punch and shoot. They're all just these characters who most of the fandom doesn't really like, and they just punch and shoot. So what, what do we have to bring to the table here? Why are we even together? What is this? And really, they're just a bunch of broken people who come together as a found family who are better than the sum of their parts. And when they're doing this lone wolf assassin thing, they are competent, but nobody's really happy doing that. It's only when they're finally doing it together and clashing and sorting out some egos that they find some fulfillment in being heroes in the light and working together. And, you know, maybe we can help each other overcome our baggage. And once again, as a meta commentary, this movie is doing very well financially and critically. So these previously underloved elements of the darkest parts of the MCU are in a textual way and a metatextual way finally being celebrated for the good they are, which is a nice thing. So I do appreciate Thunderbolts for that.
Yeah, it had good. Was there anything you thought could have been done better, or?
It felt like a Disney Plus show visually, which I don't know is necessarily a good thing or a bad thing, but I'm having some issues with it. It didn't feel as cinematic as old MCU did. Like, Disney Plus shows are very high budgeted. They certainly felt more cinematic than most previous TV felt. Like, it was, you go to the MCU, and even one of the early ones, let's say like WandaVision, felt so much more cinematic than Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. or something that was on ABC Network TV. It felt like a huge step up. But now we're getting into the Thunderbolts, and I feel like it's about that level of quality still. If you look at other movies being done, I feel like it's the visual style is a cut down from other better movies, but it's still like it's good for TV, bad for cinema sort of deal. Am I making sense?
Yeah. Well, I think some of it also came down to that flat color palette of the Captain America movies.
That too.
It's the same. You know, at first, like the first scene, the desert scene, everything's actually got an interesting color palette. It's a bit different. And then they hit New York and it turns into that flat, like gray and blue Captain America color that I despise.
I understand there's this association with you strip down the saturation, it feels grittier, more, I don't know, lifelike, grounded. But I think life is full of color, and even the darker tone and themes, it's overdone. Find a different way to bring that out.
Well, I think it would have even benefited the what's his name, the shadow guy,
Void.
Slash, I think it would have benefited more to watch the color drain out of the scene whenever he kind of would come around, or you know, when his effect is spreading across, you could see that like color drain first before,
yeah, definitely,
or something.
I can definitely see that. It's a style. I think it's an improved version of what Captain America was doing. Like you said, a lot of the scenes were better on the whole.
Well, even into the dream sequences are pretty well done too. They've got a unique visual style, but it's the whole section in New York.
Yeah, I also feel like there's still somewhat of a reluctance to embrace the goofier aspects of the comics. It was nearly a joke when Sentry walked out in his bright, comic accurate yellow uniform, which I'm sure we'll never see again, based on his reaction. Oh, and did you have to dye my hair blonde too? We didn't even talk about that.
I don't know, I kind of liked it. I thought it was good.
No, I liked it. I'm just saying the movie is pulling an X-Men 2000 of what would you prefer, yellow spandex?
Fair.
I don't think we're ever going to see that suit again. It was just there for lip service. The same way the Thunderbolts are all in muted tactical versions of their outfits, which kind of goes back to First Avenger, which I enjoy. It looks more functional than like Captain America in The first Avengers movie was trying to look comic accurate, and that fell flat on its face as a costume. So they went back to the more tactical look and overcompensated. And the MCU has never really come back from that costumes-wise. I do wish they'd embrace more of what they did with Sentry for other characters. Just don't be afraid to add a little more flaring.
It's like the MCU is allergic to color.
Yeah, even Ghost was in an all-black uniform this time. She had a, you know, at least a more striking white uniform in Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Mm-hmm.
So even that uniqueness was stripped down for this. Red Guardian is at least in a red uniform, which is something. John Walker's got the muted red, white, and blue, which, fine, that's a little color, but it's not much.
But the colors didn't pop the same as the Black Widow movie when like Red Guardian was actually fairly bright.
And Natasha was in an all-white suit for a large section of that movie. That looked nice.
The color, actually, that's the one thing I'll give the Black Widow movies. The color grade looked good.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. As for other criticisms, I was just remembering, I think Ghost was the weakest handled member of the team.
Did she have any lines?
She did. Most of them about how her powers weren't working in these specifically set up contexts, which is another criticism, is they had to go bend over backwards just to make sure Ghost's powers wouldn't work. Otherwise, it would have been an easy out in multiple scenarios. Like, oh wow, so okay, so Valentina lured us all here and we have to get out of this, and Ghost can't just walk out of it, but the power system to make sure she can't get out is in this room. Okay. Or when she was trying to get out of the car in the car chase, and I think they had like a sonic cannon on her or something, and she, okay, oops, can't get out of the car there to do anything useful. So, for a lot of the movie, Ghost just...
She really got the shaft, didn't she?
Yeah.
Holy.
I feel like there was a character arc left on the cutting room floor. Because she was... Well,
apparently, Taskmaster was completely cut.
Yep. Apparently, there was an arc for Taskmaster, and then they just shot her in the head as collateral damage. I guess it did make it feel a bit more dangerous. Oh, wow. We just shot Taskmaster in the head. Okay, that's a way to start. Which... I was just looking up.
That did absolutely nothing for me because I didn't really recognize her or even know that she was going to be in the movie. So for me, I was just like, oh, grunt number one died? I don't know.
Yeah, I was just looking up the writer's credits because I saw the report about that, the writer of it, who said, oh, I didn't even know Taskmaster was just shafted like that till I watched the movie, and he wrote the screenplay. Co-wrote the screenplay for Thunderbolts. He also wrote Black Widow, apparently, and some of Agent Carter and Thor Ragnarok, apparently, which I guess is his best outing in the MCU. Most of his credits are Marvel MCU based. And he did Godzilla vs. Kong, which I actually liked. And then his co-writer is known for BoJack Horseman and the Bear, Joanna Kalo, which I guess she was based on the other guy, Eric Pearson. Based on his credits, she was doing more of the heavy lifting on this one. But I don't know. If you wrote Thor Ragnarok, I don't want to discount him too bad. I mean, obviously he set the base for, like, I guess he's the guy for Yelena, considering he wrote Black Widow. He's the one who's most responsible for bringing her to life next to Florence Pugh.
But I see that now that you mention it. Yeah, the way the characters' like relationships converge and combine like that is totally like the Bear. It's just like it.
Yeah.
That relationship dynamic was really well done, and I thought that was really good with this movie.
Yeah, working, how they all go from lone wolves to working together as a team. One thing I appreciated about Bucky in particular was how he's coming at this from later on in the timeline, in a way, because he is past his mercenary years, his mercenary hired killer years. He's a U.S. congressman now. And when he finally guts the entire Thunderbolts team tied up single-handedly, and he's kind of listening to them all self-loathing, you can just see in Sebastian Stan's acting that sort of, he's empathizing with these people who he knows can be better because he's done this, and he's come out the other side, and the hero in him says, if I just give these people a chance, they can probably be better. I can tell they want to be better. So he's, in some ways, the moral guidance at this point. And I guess Red Guardian's another, he's also kind of the moral guidance, but just in a more bombastic sort of way. More of a glory-seeking way.
I will say one of the parts I really enjoyed was when he had them tied up, and it's like, okay, you got Yelena and Ghost there. Well, Ghost was with the bracers, Yelena's tied up with the rope, and then there's just a steel bar wrapped around John Walker and Red Guardian. I was like, that's great.
You got three super soldiers on this team.
Yeah.
Which, as far as superpowers go, is the most you get. I mean, Ghost is, she has powers too, but in terms of like strength, and then Bob, who's just God. Yeah. But apparently he's just turning that off at the end of the movie now. He's just, no, I don't want to do that anymore. I'm going to keep that under wraps until Avengers Doomsday, probably. And then he'll bring it out again. Probably. We'll see. So the end of this movie backslides these band of lovable misfits into Earth's Mightiest Heroes.
Yeah, you've been making a mistake with the title of this movie this whole time.
Yeah, sorry, the asterisk was important.
Yeah.
It's the New Avengers. With a Z.
Is that the actual title? Or?
I don't know if they actually changed it to New Avengers with a Z. I heard they actually renamed the movie in theaters, but I didn't check if it was with a Z. Would have been great if they did. But, yeah, so at the end of this movie, they save New York and have information that will get Valentina in trouble, and to save face in light of this evidence, she makes the Thunderbolts into the New Avengers, bases them in Avengers Tower, and we get a really fun parade of post-credit scenes which show how the public is reacting. I think my favorite one was the magazine article that said the B-Vengers. Just half the people don't take them seriously. Speaking of costumes, I really did enjoy the costumes in the post-credit scene. Those ones had more flair. Those ones popped. I really like John Walker in the beret, for example, with the taco shield. You know.
The taco shield.
Yeah, like the New Avengers costumes looked way cooler than the Thunderbolts ones. So that,
well, it really goes from being the, you know, Yelena soccer team to the Avengers. You gotta have an up in the costumes.
Which is really sneaky of Marvel to put that asterisk in there, make us wonder what's going on the entire time, and then on the eve of Avengers Doomsday, give us basically the origin story for a New Avengers movie.
I can't believe they had the balls to actually change the name like within a week.
Yeah.
Like all the posters, everything got changed. I was like, what?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know how I'd feel about that if you went to go see it now and it's like, well,
New Avengers. I don't know.
Kind of spoiled, I guess.
Yeah.
Like, we couldn't have left that as the end of the movie. Like, they basically just spoiled the end of the movie, did they not?
Yeah, pretty much.
That was the big reveal at the end of the movie. Now I'm not going to watch that movie. I mean, I'd feel kind of ripped off if I went in and went, oh, well, that's it. We already knew this going in. It was called The New Avengers.
As people who watched it opening weekend and didn't know the twist, I had a really good time with the twist.
Yeah.
I liked the movie a lot more retroactively. From that twist, I'm like, oh, it's, I mean, you know, the critic in me still says the movie is what it is going up to it. But as a Marvel Cinematic Universe fan, I think, wow, somebody who hasn't been interested in the Avengers for, you know, since Endgame, we basically destroyed the Avengers. There's no Avengers team currently, except Sam Wilson, who's trying to start something but has no members yet. And then you basically put all these characters who I've really come to like and you make them the new Avengers without me expecting that they're going to be the Avengers. And now I'm excited for more Avengers movies because I really like this team and want to see their adventures continue. It was kind of smart as somebody who was there opening day. But if you're coming into it now, seeing it as the new Avengers, I feel like that's just setting it up for being disappointing. It's not an Avengers movie. It's a backdoor pilot into a new Avengers team.
Yeah, really, if you go in expecting, oh, these are the new Avengers, okay, and then you're like, they kind of suck.
Yeah, which is the whole idea. They are kind of supposed to suck and then go on their heroes' journeys to becoming better than they thought they could be. But calling it the new Avengers,
it's just setting them up for failure.
Yeah. So that's not a critique of the movie, but of Marvel's marketing strategy of the movie.
I would have said, like, after the theater run, if they changed the title, okay, that's fine. Maybe. If that's what you really wanted to do, but I don't think it needed to be. I don't think it needed to be changed. It was in the movie, we all saw it, and we went, oh, that's what the asterisk is for. Oh, I get it. But maybe they thought they would draw more people in being like, oh yeah, this isn't just any old Marvel movie, this is an Avengers movie. But I feel like that's a bit of a false advertising in a way.
Yeah, pretty much. One thing I enjoyed about the way the action escalated is there were always problems on top of problems, which felt especially notable because this group had no powers. Every situation felt like, oh, so we actually have to think a little bit harder about how to get out of this. And the tension kept escalating. I think my favorite example was when they had to climb out of that giant pit on their backs. Like when, okay, none of us can fly, so we all have to go up. And, you know, Bob's getting tired and we're slipping. And then we get to the door and, oh.
Now what?
Yeah. Who, if we have to let go to open the door, who's going to be the one to let go and we're all going to fall? And
kind of like that John Walker kind of showed his cockiness, but also that he was capable at the same time.
He did it.
He did it, but without anybody else's thing, he's just like, going to do it because I know I can do it.
Yeah. Nearly screwed everybody, but he did it.
It really shows his character, though.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's the thing, is that he got a lot of bad rep in Falcon and the Winter Soldier, and he was a pretty well-done character.
I was wondering at the start of this movie why he had become so much more of an asshole than he was in Falcon and the Winter Soldier. But then I'm like, okay, well, in Falcon and the Winter Soldier, he was not that bad until he got his Super Soldier Serum dose. Then he became more of a jerk in that show. Like, Bucky and Falcon always treated him like he was that big of a jerk, but he didn't actually become that way until he got his Super Soldier Serum. And then later on in this movie, we get the reveal that his wife left him and took his kid. And yeah, okay. And he's still fighting for the U.S. government under the shadows. He's a disgraced Captain America. He thinks he's above the people that he's working with here. Look, I'm a former Captain America. You guys are just a band of mercenaries I've been sent to kill. And I'm above you. I'm America's hero. I'm a former military guy. I'm still respected by my government, kind of.
It did also put him a little in his place when it was like, oh no, you're actually here to be taken out of the equation.
Yeah. Oh.
I think that put a little bit of a damper on him after that point, but he was still showing off his confidence a little bit, but not overconfident. He was actually successful in everything he did.
Yeah. I think it's a testament to Wyatt Russell to make this character still likable despite being such an arrogant egotist. He's just amusing to watch. I always enjoyed John Walker. He's just fun.
It's hard to make a character an asshole and also likable at the same time. That's difficult. But he pulls it off.
Especially when the whole movie he's picking on poor Bob.
And everybody feels bad for Bob.
everybody.
Except for John Walker.
Yeah. Which is kind of funny because John Walker, in a way, he was right about Bob. Like, okay, we shouldn't have been trusting this guy. He's very, very powerful. But at the same time, it was that compassion which ended up saving the day, because Bob, at the end of the day, is a very powerful person, but he is a good person. He's just tired of being used, and he's got this, you know, switch in his head that flips between the void, which is all his most negative talk and anxieties and self-doubts coalesced into this just being of darkness, which is a metaphor and literal representation of all the worst inside him. And then the sentry, which is still anxiety-ridden Bob, but the good parts of him that just kind of flip depending on his mood.
Am I right in remembering that at the end it was John Walker who started the push to be like, don't do that?
I don't recall. I think I remember Yelena doing a lot of the pushing. John Walker was helping to fight up to him, but I think they all kind of had their group.
I know they
moment.
All kind of, but I seem to remember that it was that, like, yeah, Yelena was pushing, but I think it was, for me, it was John Walker who was kind of the key to that scene, at least a little bit in a way, because it's like, hey, this is the exact mistake I made.
Yeah.
Like.
Yeah, I don't remember that specifically, but that it's a nice idea.
I don't know, that part stood out for his character, at least to me, especially because he was on Bob's case the whole time, the entire movie, and then he was the one who was kind of like, don't do it, man. Like,
yeah. Good character development there. So the humor in this movie is still very much Marvel humor, still sassy and quippy, but I feel like they toned it back more this time.
It works for these characters too.
Yeah.
It's not bad. Some characters it just didn't work for. Like, I didn't appreciate it with some characters in the MCU, but it felt fine for these characters.
Especially because it never, I don't think it ever undercut the action. It always felt like we're just bored professionals who are very good at our jobs and need a little bit of levity just to make this situation interesting for us, because the combat's too easy. But they were never really joking when things got serious. When they actually were like, oh, we're out of our depth right now and we actually need to focus up and try, I don't remember them joking as much in those scenarios. It was when they were fighting the grunts or just kind of bantering with each other mid-fights, when they were feeling pretty confident, that's when they were joking and quipping more. But I think they got serious when they needed to. I also like the generally lower stakes of this movie for most of it. Most of it is, once again, these characters who just punch and shoot, and they're trying to escape from their government. Most of it is hand-to-hand combat and gun battles, which were pretty well choreographed and shot and edited. It looked good, not exceptional, but it was good. And it was really only at the end with Manhattan destroying stakes that it...
Well, even coming up to the end, it was still kind of they raised the stakes a bit to make them really feel like heroes with the buildings crumbling, and they were kind of saving everybody individually. And it's like, oh, okay, that was it. I don't know. And then stuff really hit the fan.
But I still appreciate how even at the biggest action set piece of this movie, it never really went beyond a city block.
No, it was a handful of civilians that they were saving, and that was the biggest set piece.
It was mostly a conversation and them rapping with their own internal demons and trying to push through their own baggage was really what ended up saving the day. It was a metaphorical victory. They didn't do a heck of a lot in the physical world. No sky beams, no robots, aliens.
Well, and I think it defeats like the logic behind like the original Suicide Squad movie, where it's like, Does this seem like a threat that these characters should be facing? Well, in this instance, it went from you know, a minor incident to major in like a split second. There was no chance for anybody else to show up. It was them or nobody, basically.
It was them or nobody, and they absolutely did not stand a chance. These, you know, in a Suicide Squad situation, these are not the people you should be sending after somebody like Sentry. It just so happened that they could relate to Sentry on an emotional level enough to talk him down, because they knew fighting was not an option after trying and failing miserably. I like that they did try to fight Sentry once, just to show the audience there was no way you're getting out of this with a physical confrontation with this guy. That's a no-go here. So we have to find a better solution. It was just a clever way to say, we got to do this differently than usual. It's not going to be a beat-em-up ending. And then he ends up part of the team. Who knew? And Valentina still stays their boss. She doesn't get caught. She doesn't go to prison. It's kind of a subversive ending that way. The bad guys end up either managing or being part of the team.
Politicians.
Yep. That includes Bucky Barnes now. He's not a great congressman, but, you know, he's popular. He's not good at the public relations part. He was very bad on camera. Doesn't know what to say. Yeah, so. And he just kind of goes in circles. But he's probably good at his job. I'd hope. Even though he doesn't read the information packets. But he's a badass. I love that scene when he's single-handedly taking on the convoy. Where he basically just blows everybody up, blows up the military guys, and flips the cars, captures all the Thunderbolts single-handed off-screen. Like, wow, this is a great showing for Bucky. He's so cool. What else? Another criticism. Some clunky dialogue. Just the way the dialogue is sometimes is a little stilted or on the nose, or, you know, dialogue isn't always Marvel's strong suit, but was it, you did mention at the time you felt like this was, it's meant for older people, but it's written like it's for younger demographic.
That's right. The message and everything behind it just felt like, it's like, okay, like, is this a message for children? Like, this is how a children's movie would present a message to an audience. I don't know. It's just not as
subtle
or, you know, sophisticated of a message, really. So I don't really know who the target audience is.
I'm of two minds on it, because while it wasn't a subtle message, I also at the same time respect it for being a cohesively delivered message. And that most, not just Marvel, but superhero movies by and large, especially in the last 10 years, haven't been great at having central themes that they stick to. I will throw Marvel under the bus. DC haven't always hit the execution, but most of their movies have central themes. Marvel movies are very, like, what is this actually about besides spandex wearing heroes saving the day a lot of times. So I think it's a good faith interpretation that Marvel is trying to make their movies about something. And it's a start. I see it as a step in the right direction, if lacking some nuance.
I don't know. I feel like the messages were there for some of the early movies.
The early ones especially.
As they went on, the messages kind of got lost a bit. But this one, to me, just felt really on the nose and, just more of a message for kids, basically. So that, to me, just kind of threw me off, because it's like, well, is this, like, a reboot? Is this going to be the Avengers for, like, how old we were when we started watching these movies? Is that who they're trying to pick up with this?
Yeah, we were about 14 when the first Avengers came out.
So that's the audience, to me, it felt like it was targeting with that message, right? But I sat there and I'm like, well,
14-year-olds aren't watching Marvel anymore.
Yeah, are those audience members even here? Like, they're...
Star Wars has the same problem. They're targeting towards people who aren't watching anymore. Something like Skeleton Crew was targeted towards...
an audience that doesn't exist for Star Wars.
Yeah. Like, I think Marvel specifically, most of the older fans left a long time ago. The younger fans never really got into it. It's you and I in our mid-20s who are the only ones still watching Marvel movies, by and large, at this point. And I feel like Star Wars is a similar thing. Like, we're the ones who are, like, the Dave Filoni side of Star Wars specifically is tailored for us. We're the ones who were kids when Clone Wars came out, the animated stuff, the Ahsoka TV show as well, those kind of things, they're tailored towards us. Other things maybe tailored towards an audience, which I don't know exist. I feel like that's why they're bringing in more prequel stuff in Star Wars lately, because
they know that's the audience right now.
Yeah, because everyone who grew up on the original trilogy rage quit half a decade ago, and most of them aren't coming back. We're the only ones who still watch. And I think Marvel's going through a similar crisis right now. They need to know who's watching and judge accordingly.
Although, to me, I feel like Disney on a whole has had this sort of long-term game plan. This is my theory about Disney Plus, because frequently news articles are like, oh, Disney Plus is losing money, this, that, they're blowing money here and there, their subscribers aren't making them any money. To me, it looks like a long game plan, mm-hmm. And they're like, we are building up a catalog of things. These might not be for people who are alive today. Like,
mm-hmm.
It's not for the audience of today, it's for the audience of tomorrow to come back to.
Sure, I can see that.
So part of me thinks that that's kind of what they're trying to do. Is that this might be a thing that people, like Thunderbolts, will be something that they'll come back to afterwards when they catch the audience with something bigger and cooler, like
Doomsday, maybe.
Doomsday, or, you know, with Doomsday being really popular, they'll sell lots more toys and stuff that just inherently look cool. Like, I don't know, when I was a kid, I wanted toys that I didn't know these characters, but I was like, that looks cool. And then you find out about it, right?
Yeah. Even though Doomsday is a weird one, because I don't know how many new Avengers fans are coming to that, because Doomsday is very hard, like heavily relying on, oh, Robert Downey Jr. is coming back as Dr. Doom, and we got a lot of the original X-Men cast from 20 years ago, the X-Men movies we grew up with. I'm like, okay, maybe that is them finally starting to tailor to their audience.
Maybe.
We're the ones who went to see Deadpool and Wolverine, the love letter to the Fox universe that we grew up with. That's not going to hit for anybody younger than us.
Well, I think that's the thing, is they need to do a mix of both. They can't just fully go in on the, okay, we're making stuff for the audience of tomorrow. Well, you can't rely on that, because that's not money coming in today.
Yeah.
Disney's got lots of money they can burn, but they can't lose that much money. They can't just lose an infinite amount of money. Yep. They have to kind of balance it out, but they can take loss year after year. Their company isn't going to die from losing on a couple movies or losing on Disney Plus.
No.
That's why I feel like they're doing a balance of both. They're trying to keep, because if they don't have their current people that are watching, then it'll dry up completely.
I think with Disney Plus, though, they did finally start to learn their lesson. It was losing them enough money and enough stock percentages that they're finally starting to cut back on what they greenlight.
Well, see, that's where the problem with the plan comes in, is that you can't fully explain your long plan. You know, your stockholders are going to be like, hey, what's going on here? You're losing money year after year. And then the only thing you could say is, we got a plan.
What do you mean you spent $300 million on the Acolyte? What? What do you mean you spent $600 million on Andor? What? That's hard to explain to your shareholders.
Yeah.
These 10-episode shows are costing hundreds of millions. We're like, what do you mean you spent $300 million on Indiana Jones 3? What are you spending money... 5. What are you spending money on? Jeez. Why are you losing so much? How are these ever supposed to turn a profit? Which, you know, Hollywood accounting, they're probably not supposed to. But it looked bad.
It looked bad to shareholders, yeah.
So, all that to say, Thunderbolts, I think, is worth a watch. It's a fun superhero movie. Has good themes. Not subtly, but decently executed. It's a fun cast. Great chemistry together. And I had a fun time with it.
Yeah, it was good. I give it I'm going to give it a mid-tier garbage.
Sure.
It's not good enough to be like, yeah, you need to go watch it, but it's not bad. My ratings only go good, mid-tier garbage, and bad. That's it.
Yeah, I'm like mid-positive. So, where can we find you?
You can find me on Instagram at jchurchtpm.
And you can find me on Instagram at ThoughtPlane Media. And check out thoughtplane.ca for everything else we do. There's hundreds of posts for free on there. And you can donate a buck or two if you like our work and you're feeling generous. We hope to see you on the next close-up with Ryan and Joe. Till next time.
Take care.